All right, we're in Revelation chapter 12, and in the last verse of chapter 11, if you recall, you guys been looking at the book any? You've been opening your book at any time between these studies? Always good to have a paper Bible, and on occasion, from time to time, you know, open it up and look at it. Read some of the verses. And in the last verse of chapter 11, you remember the temple of God in heaven was opened, and there was seen in the temple the ark of his testament. Want to know where the lost ark is? Well, there it is. It was seen in heaven, and there were lightnings and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. So when chapter 12 opens, we come to the central subject of the whole book of Revelation, and we're right in the center of those seven visions that John had. John had a series of visions, and you can mark them off like seven visions. There were things in heaven, and as a result of the things in heaven, then there were things that John saw in the earth. And John writes about those visions, and he sends the book that he wrote to the angels of the seven churches which are in Asia. And here in chapter 12, we have a view. Basically, what we have is a view of prophetic history. In other words, the events actually took place earlier. And here we have the record of events that will have taken place before the time of chapter 6, and they lead up to and run parallel with what's recorded in chapter 6 and onward from that point. For instance, the beast and the false prophet are on the earth all that time, all during the time period of the tribulation, and that's clear from Revelation chapter 11. And verse 7, I guess I better get out of Matthew. Let me get over to Revelation. Look at Revelation chapter 11 and verse 7. And when they had finished their testimony, the beast that ascended out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. Well, now you guys know who that is. That's the two witnesses, right? The two olive trees. The two witnesses, that would be Moses and Elijah, and they're going to be killed. And by the fact that they are killed, you can see that the beast is already there. You follow what I'm talking about? He's already on the earth during the first 3.5 years of the tribulation period. So there in chapter 11, we're not told how he came to be on the earth. So now we're taken back to a point before chapter 6. Here in chapter 12, we're going back to a point before chapter 6, and we're told of the causes which lead up to the revelation of both the beast and the false prophet. And it's not until we get to chapter 13 that John sees those two beasts come up. Remember that, guys? One from out of the sea and the other from out of the earth, and all that's described in our next chapter, in chapter 13. So this chapter actually goes back before the time that we've already studied about and read about, and it goes on beyond that time. Everybody see that? Did I make myself perfectly confusing sounding? Okay, here we go. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 1. Can you hear me okay? Revelation 12 and 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now, this is the very first time in Revelation that we see a wonder in heaven. Now, signs are something that the Jews require, right? Remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 22? For the Jews require a sign. And we know that speaking in tongues was a sign for the Jews. It was a sign for unbelieving Jews. Healing was a sign. Cleansing lepers was a sign. The raising of the dead, like Lazarus, was a sign. But here, we have a wonder. A wonder in heaven. Signs were literal. They were literal things. They literally happened, right? This thing that we've got here obviously is not literal. See, we have a wonder, and a wonder stands for something. Notice that it's not just a wonder, but it's a great wonder. And the minute you see the description of the sun-clothed woman, what does it remind you of? It reminds you of something that you read back in the book of Genesis, right? Genesis, exactly, Joseph. Genesis and Revelation are very much connected. And in Genesis, remember, Joseph back there had a dream. Look back in Genesis chapter 37 and notice in verse 5. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, excuse me, got the strangles this morning. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose, also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, behold, I've dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father, notice that right there, observed the saying. Now remember that at this time, there were 11 brothers, right? We don't have Benjamin yet. And Joseph was the youngest at this time. And you know what happened? Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt, and as a result of that, a number of other things happened. So, at any rate, what you're seeing here is a picture of the nation of Israel. And it's Israel in tribulation, isn't it? It's Israel in the time of trouble. It's amazing how much the events in Joseph's life match Jesus Christ. Joseph is actually a type of Christ. Did you ever consider this verse here? In Acts chapter 7, notice in Acts chapter 7 and verse 13. And at the second time, Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known to Pharaoh. What does that sound like? Sounds like the second coming, maybe. At the second time he was made known to his brethren. Sounds familiar in that context, doesn't it? Notice with me in Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews 9 and verse 28. So Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. So Joseph had been sold into slavery in Egypt, but had found favor with Pharaoh, remember, so that when the famine came in the land of Canaan, and Jacob, who's the grandson of Abraham, was told to go down into Egypt. You know what was happening there, guys? Everything was working exactly according to that 400-year prophecy that the Lord had revealed to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 15. You remember that? Abraham believed in the Lord in Genesis 15, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And Abraham asked the Lord in Genesis 15 and verse 8, he said, Lord God, how shall I know? Whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And it's the reference to the inheritance of the land of Palestine there. So the Lord told him about these sacrifices here. Abraham fixed all those things. And then in verse 11, and when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abram drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a great horror of a great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, know of a surety, there it is, that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and they shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Let me get rid of this situation right here. There you go. So, by going down into Egypt, Jacob and his whole family were saved, weren't they, so to speak? They were saved from that famine in the land of Canaan. Joseph, it turned out, was their Savior, wasn't he? Hence, he is a type of Jesus Christ. Now, there are some people in religion that think that the 12 stars that we saw in the sun-clothed woman there in that verse, they think it's a reference to the 12 signs of the zodiac. And E.W. Bullinger taught that and even wrote a book called Witness of the Stars. You guys ever read Bullinger's book called Witness of the Stars? It's a fascinating book. And in it, Bullinger says that the stars, in other words, the zodiac, witnessed great truths. But he says that the heathen nations perverted that truth, and hence it became nothing more than superstitious astrology as we know it today. Bullinger says that it was the origin of all the old Greek and Babylonian mythologies. And I'm not sure about all of that, but I know what Paul says. I know Paul says in the book of Romans, in Romans chapter 1, in verse 20, look at what he says. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beast, and creeping things. People say, and I know you've heard this, and they quote it, the heavens declare the glory of God. But I doubt that you or me would have even known that if the Bible hadn't have told us. In other words, if there was that ancient truth written in the heavens, I don't know of anybody that knew it. I certainly didn't know it. But evidently, 2,000 or 2,500 years before Moses, the heavens declared the glory of God and not only showed his handiwork, but day after day uttered speech and night after night showed knowledge. But you know what? I didn't learn that by looking up in the sky. I learned that from Psalm chapter 19. Look with me in Psalm chapter 19 and verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. But Joseph in that dream, he didn't tell what he saw in the zodiac, did he? He told what he saw in his dream. And notice this, back in Genesis chapter 37 again. Notice in verse 11. And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Now, people say that this sun-clothed woman, and I'm going to get back to the verse, put it back on the screen here, Revelation 12 and 1. People say that that sun-clothed woman represents the church. But what does the church have to do with Genesis chapter 37? The only symbol in the whole Bible connects this woman here in Revelation chapter 12 with Genesis chapter 37. And the church is not there. But Israel most certainly is, right? Jacob's name has been changed to Israel. It represents Israel in tribulation, and it has to do with Israel and that man Jacob being his name changed to Israel, going down into Egypt because of a famine in the land of Canaan. Over and over in the Old Testament, Israel is compared to a woman and a married woman. And in time of her rejection, she's compared to a widow. Look at Ezekiel with me. Notice in Ezekiel chapter 16 and notice verse 8. Now, when I passed by thee and looked upon thee, behold, thy time was the time of love, and I spread my skirt over thee, and covered thy nakedness. Yea, I swore unto thee, and entered into a covenant with thee, saith the Lord God, and thou becamest mine. So Israel then, the nation of Israel collectively, they're God's covenant people, aren't they? And the covenant is similar to marriage. You know, marriage is a covenant. Marriage is a bona fide, legal, binding agreement, isn't it? So Israel then is compared to a married woman, and she became the Lord's. And in the book of Revelation, you remember that the church in Ephesus, one of those seven churches, was told that they had left their first love. Look in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 4. He says, "Nevertheless, I have somewhat against thee, because thou hast left there thy first love." That's what it's a reference to. So Israel, in rejection, is referred to as a widow. She was a married woman, but she's also referred to as a widow. Look in Lamentations chapter 1 and verse 1. "How doth the city sit solitary that was full of people? How is she become as a widow?" She's also compared to a divorced woman, as in the case today. That's the way Israel stands today. She's Lo am I, right? Not God's people. Look in Jeremiah chapter 3 and notice in verse 8. "And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery." Now think about, Susan, think about what you were asking me there this morning and the woman or the women in that verse that we were talking about. Backsliding Israel committed adultery. "I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also." Notice in Isaiah chapter 50 and verse 1. "Thus saith the Lord, where is the bill of your mother's divorcement, whom I've put away? Or which of my creditors is it to whom I've sold you? Behold, your iniquities have you sold yourself, and for your transgressions is your mother put away." So the whole point is in the tribulation, the sun-clothed woman could be nothing other than the only other reference to it in the Bible. It's Israel, isn't it? So back in Revelation chapter 12 now, Revelation 12 verse 2, "And she, being with child, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered." So she's travailing in birth and pained to be delivered. Keep in mind that Jesus Christ spoke of the same thing. Look with me in Luke, and in Luke chapter 16, notice in verse 20. He said, "There was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores." I don't think that's the one I wanted at all. Sorry about that, guys. I've already written down a wrong reference. But at any rate, what Paul said, remember what Paul said? "When the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law." Yeah, I guess it did, Norm. "And I know that it would be in fulfillment of the promise to the woman back in Genesis and to her seed." Remember? Genesis 3:15. "The Lord said to Satan, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." So the birth of that seed was the object then of Israel's hope. And here we have the fact that God's going all the way back to the beginning, and in spite of all the opposition of Satan, from the Garden of Eden right there, right on forward, and of all the corruption of his way, of God's way, we see the conclusion of his purpose for the planet here in the book of Revelation, and that purpose is redemption. So it seems clear that the woman is Israel and represents the nation of Israel as a whole, but then we see another wonder. There's another wonder there. Look in Revelation chapter 12 and the very next verse there in verse 3. "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven horns and ten heads, and seven crowns upon his head. And there's no question of what this wonder is, and there's no doubt about it because we're told, aren't we? In verse 9, on down later in the chapter, in verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So that's who that great red dragon is. He's identified there. We know it's the devil, right? And we see the signs of his earthly power and his dominion in those seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns on his head. So today, and up to the time that we're reading about, which is a future time here in the book of Revelation, Jesus Christ is not exercising all power in heaven and earth, is he? Not at this time. The 12 apostles were told in Matthew 28 that all power was given to Christ. And he said, go ye therefore. He said, therefore, go ye therefore. So we see that the so-called Great Commission people think that they're involved in can't be fulfilled until the time the Lord takes that power. And that's what we're reading about here, and it's still future in the book of Revelation. But today there's a very powerful individual operating in the world, and he's operating in at full power. Look at Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2. Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. You know, basically by that verse right there, you could say that all unbelievers are demon-possessed, couldn't you? Notice in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3, but if our gospel be hid, it's hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world, notice that, the God of this world, hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who's the image of God, should shine unto them. The devil, then, is the god of this world, isn't he? And he's most certainly operating today at full power, isn't he? And you know what? Jesus Christ didn't dispute that. He didn't argue about that. Notice in Luke chapter 4 and verse 5, and the devil, taking him up into a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. You ought to think about that. You realize that devil's got some power. If he can warp time and manipulate time like that and show the Lord all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. If thou therefore will worship me, all shall be thine. See, he had the right to do that, and the Lord didn't argue with him about it. All the kingdoms of this world rightfully belong to the devil, because Adam lost control back there in the Garden of Eden, and he gave that dominion to Satan. Satan got that dominion by default, by right. And those heads and those horns and those crowns are the sign of that earthly power. And he'll give it, notice what he said, he'll give it to whomsoever he will choose. He's going to choose somebody too, isn't he? Notice in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 2. And the beast, there he is, which I saw was likened to a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, notice, and his seat and great authority. And there you see those kingdoms of the world. They're represented by the leopard, the bear, and the lion. It all goes back to the book of Daniel. Remember those wild beasts that Daniel saw in his visions back there? And all those different kingdoms, they're all likened to those individual beasts there, the leopard, the bear, and the lion. So we have the woman here in Revelation chapter 12. We have the sun-clothed woman, which is Israel. And we have the woman's enemy pictured here. And who's that? That's the devil. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 4. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And here we're taken back to the very beginning of things, even to the time of Satan's rebellion back there before the beginning of recorded time, and to the angels who fell with him. And don't forget that those angels are referred to as stars in the King James Bible. So those stars there, the third part of the stars of heaven, it seems clear that that third part is a third part of the angels in heaven, and they followed Satan in that first great rebellion. In other words, they would have joined Lucifer in that first rebellion. Back in Genesis, the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and so forth. And Jude says, in the book of Jude, that those angels, those sons of God, kept not their first estate. They left their own habitation, didn't they? So the sons of God are created beings. And as a result of all that, there were giants in the earth in those days, the Bible says, in Genesis chapter 6, and also after that. And there were giants in the land of Canaan when Abraham and his seed of Abraham, came in to take possession of the land of Canaan, didn't it? In some way, those angels kept not their first estate and left their own habitation. In other words, some way, they took on a form of mortality, and they literally married women. Now, some of this is the corruption that we're talking about with that 144,000 that were not defiled with women. Some of this right here figures into all that. But these creatures, these stars here, and the ones that kept not their first estate, they're angels. And in this case, they're fallen angels, and they failed to follow Lucifer of Isaiah chapter 14. But there's every indication that what happened back there in Genesis, what happened in the land of Canaan, there's every indication that they will repeat that. They'll repeat what has happened before. Notice with me in Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24 and in verse 37. These are the words of Jesus Christ here. And he says, "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also be the coming of man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking," and notice, "marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away." The whole earth had corrupted God's way. The only man that had a pure seed line left on the planet was Noah. He was not corrupted. He was perfect in his generations, and that's what that's a reference to there. It doesn't mean that Noah was perfect, and it doesn't mean that Noah was sinless. It just means that his bloodline had not been corrupted by these fallen angels. And Jesus Christ said, "So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." And the only reference that you have to marriage back there is the marriage of the sons of God to the daughters of men. Go back with me to Genesis chapter 6. Notice in verse 1, "And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose." Now, in the days of Noah, the Bible says, like I said before, that all flesh had corrupted his way, and this is the corruption. This is what led to that corruption there. And it came about as a result of this situation right here. So Noah and his family were the only ones of the whole planet that were saved in the ark. And that has to do with the devil's attempt to destroy the promised seed of the woman of Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. And here in our study in Revelation chapter 12, he's standing before the sun-clothed woman in the wonder there, to devour her child as soon as it was born. And these two wonders here take us all the way back to events which date from the foundation of the world. Now that phrase there, the phrase, from the foundation of the world. You find that phrase, it appears 6 times in a King James Bible, all in the Hebrew epistles. You find it twice in the book of Matthew, once in the Gospel of Luke, once in Hebrews, and twice here in the book of Revelation, from the foundation of the world. Now, there's another phrase in the Bible, and that phrase is before the foundation of the world. You only find that 3 times in the Bible. It's in John chapter 17, verse 24, and it's in reference to the love of God the Father for God the Son. And then in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 20, it's a reference also to Jesus Christ. But in the book of Ephesians, the phrase is a reference to us who are in the church, the body of Christ. Notice in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4, Paul says, according as he hath chosen us in him, and there's the phrase, before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love. So that is the only time that you find that phrase before the foundation of the world in reference to anybody other than God the Father or God the Son. But here in Revelation, we see something that started from the foundation of the world. You with me on that, guys? And from the time that the promise was made to the woman in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15 that her seed would crush the serpent's head. From that time, the devil took his stand to destroy her seed as soon as it should be brought forth. So that's the source of all the conflict that you read about in the Bible. And that first, the first attempt was back there in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 2. And we just looked at it there, where those fallen angels, the sons of God, took wives of the daughters of men. The devil won that one, and the world was flooded, and only one family was saved in the ark. Only 8 people were saved in the ark. The second attempt was in Exodus by Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Look in Exodus chapter 1 and verse 16. And he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But Moses, remember Moses, he was saved from that attempt, wasn't he? And later on, Moses led the children of Israel out of bondage in Egypt. Then in 2 Chronicles, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, stood up. Look with me in 2 Chronicles, and notice in 2 Chronicles chapter 21 and in verse 4. Now when Jehoram was risen up to the kingdom of his father, he strengthened himself and slew all of his brethren with the sword, and divers also of the princes of Israel. Now that's where the seed line is, right there in his brethren. But the Arabians rose up, and they came against Judah, and they killed all of his sons. Look in the next chapter, in chapter 22 and verse 1. And the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his stead, for the band of men that came with the Arabians to the camp had slain all the eldest, so Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. So he was the only descendant of the seed of the woman through Shem and through Abraham and through David, king of Israel at that time. But he had children, and these were all slain by Athaliah. At least that's what she meant to do. But there was one that was left. Notice in 2 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 11. And it says, but Jehoshabeath, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons that were slain, and put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. So Jehoshabeath, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah, and I hope I'm saying those names right, so that she slew him not. And that seed line at that time rested on the life of that one individual right there. His name was Joash. So for 6 years, all of the hopes of God's people rested on that one life. And then again later on, you remember in the book of Esther, there was another attempt to destroy the whole nation But in Esther, there was a fellow there that couldn't sleep. He had a sleepless night. Esther chapter 6 and verse 1. On that night could not the king sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And he found out something about this man named Mordecai. Who's Mordecai? Well, he's Esther's uncle. And there was an attempt made by some evildoers there to kill all the Jews. And the way this thing worked out, Esther was in a favored position with the king, and later on she became the wife of the king, and it all turned out to the Jews' favor, and the Jews had a great celebration, and a Jewish feast day was begun right there because of what happened. And it all was because of that king having a sleepless night. And he learned something about Mordecai, the uncle of Esther, and she eventually became his wife, and the Jews were saved. And then there was Herod. Remember in Matthew chapter 2? Matthew chapter 2 and verse 4, Herod the king. And when he had gathered, that's when the wise men came. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And down in verse 7, then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he killed all the children in Bethlehem, remember, under 2 years old. But again, heaven interfered. Mary and Joseph took the young child, Jesus, and they fled into Egypt, right, till the death of Herod. And then Satan himself made a subtle suggestion to Christ when Christ began his earthly ministry when he was 30 years old. And in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 6, and saith unto them, unto him, unto Jesus Christ, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against the stone. He's trying to get him to jump off the pinnacle of the temple and kill himself, wasn't he? Then the people of Nazareth tried to cast him over the brow of the hill. Remember in Luke chapter 4? Luke chapter 4 and verse 29. And rose up and thrust him out of the city and led him unto the brow of the hill whereon their city was built, that they might cast him down headlong. And then there was the storm on the Sea of Galilee, and all of these were satanic attempts to devour the man-child. And when the devil saw him on the cross, and the devil saw him laid in Joseph's tomb, and the stone with the seal on it and the watch set, the devil thought he had won, hadn't he? But look in Acts chapter 13. Acts 13, verse 28. And though they found no cause of death in him, yet desired they Pilate that he should be slain. And when they had fulfilled all that was written of him, they took him down from the tree and laid him in a sepulcher. But God raised him from the dead. And he ascended up. The 12 apostles watched him. And he went up and he sat down at the Father's right hand on the Father's throne. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 21. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am sat down with my Father in his throne. And all of that, everything that we've been looking at there and everything that we've been reading about there, we know all of that is true of Jesus Christ, do we not? We know that he is the promised seed, and that he's of the seed of Abraham, and he's of the seed of David, and we know that in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Instead, they said, away with this man, we have no king but Caesar. They said, crucify him, let his blood be upon us and our children. And we are studying about that in the book of Revelation. And it's not good, is it? So back in Revelation chapter 12 now. Revelation chapter 12, back in verse 5. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her 1,260 days. Now, at this point, there's a gap in the continuity here. This is the end of the second wonder in heaven, and verse 6 there is said by way of anticipation, because the war in heaven that we're about to read about occurs before the flight of the woman into the wilderness for 1,260 days. You guys see that? The war in heaven that we're about to read about happens after the woman Israel flees into the wilderness in the future. It hasn't happened yet, but she's going to flee in the future in the tribulation. And at the present time, the heavens are not clean in His sight. Actually, they haven't been since the book of Job. Job said, way back there in Job chapter 15, you might remember this verse, and verse 15, how much more abominable and filthy is man? Well, I did it again. Verse 15, behold, he putteth no trust in his saints, yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight. But you see, that war in heaven, which we're about to read about here, is going to do something about that situation. So the war is going to result in something that's the cause of the woman fleeing into the wilderness. And I just wanted you to see that before we move on. Notice in Revelation chapter 12. You see the gap that I'm talking about there in the continuity in Revelation chapter 12? Revelation 12, 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. So that persecution and the woman fleeing doesn't take place until after the war in heaven that we're going to read about. So that's what causes the woman to flee. And notice again the time period there. The time period is a time and times and half a time. Once again, it's the 3.5 years, 1,260 days, or 42 months. And when Satan is cast down, he knows that he hath but a short time. In other words, those 3.5 years. And those Daniel's 70th week back there in the book of Daniel is a 7-year period of time. And like I said, the beast will be reigning on the earth. The beast is going to be here during the first half of that week, but in his human form and acting peaceably too. Look back with me in the book of Daniel. Notice in Daniel chapter 11 and in verse 21, and his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. So in the Antichrist human form, he's going to be a kind of a peaceable fella. And that goes on during the first 3.5 years of that 7-year time period, see. So Satan is not cast out of heaven until the middle of that 7-year period of time. And that's when the beast, with his deadly wound, reappears and he makes war with the saints. And that's what causes the woman to flee, okay? And we won't see that war until we get over to chapter 13. Now, remember the sons of God from Genesis. Go back a minute with me to Daniel. And notice in Daniel chapter 2 and in verse 37, I just want to show you a passage here. Daniel 2 verse 37, thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. So that king there is the king of Babylon. He's Nebuchadnezzar. And he had a dream, remember? And he forgot it. He couldn't remember it. So Daniel told him both the dream and the interpretation of the dream, and the dream had to do with all the kingdoms of the world right down to the second coming of Christ, except for the dispensation of grace, which was a mystery, and that king or the interpretation didn't have anything to do with the period of time in which we live today. In other words, the image that that king saw in his dream represented all those kingdoms, and those kingdoms were represented to Daniel in Daniel's vision of the wild beast. Remember the leopard, the bear, and the lion? And that's all shown in the image, that great wonder that John saw of the Antichrist, isn't it? All those kingdoms there. So you see, there's a lot of symbolism involved. But come down now to verse 41. He's still talking to King Nebuchadnezzar here in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 41. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so this kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with clay, notice that phrase right there, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. So most likely, at the time the beast reappears, after the deadly wound is healed, there's going to be another situation just like that in the book of Genesis. The evil fallen angels will mingle themselves with the seed of men. That's fornication. That's fornication of the worst kind. And that's about as close as you're going to get to hell on earth. But now, before we go on, I want to go back. Let's go back and notice again the man-child, because there's something here that I want to try to get you to see. We've just gone all through the history of the seed of the woman, haven't we? And we know that Christ came through the nation of Israel. In other words, he was a Jew according to the flesh. And the flesh goes back through David and Abraham as a physical human being. But I believe that there's something more being referred to here. Go back and look one more time. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 5. And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. Notice the man-child there is caught up. Have you ever heard that word before? Caught up. Remember that word? Here's the word right here. This is the word. Harpazo. It's caught up. It's exactly the same word as this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 17. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up. Same word, harpazo. Caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Now, just hold that thought. Just hold that thought there, and we'll come back to it. But first, let's go on to the end of the chapter, and we're going to read about the war there in the book of Revelation, the war in heaven. And like I said, it's not happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. It's future. And when the war in heaven happens, and Satan is cast out of heaven, that will be the cause for the woman to flee. Okay, so we're not reading things, they're not written in exact chronological order. I'm just trying to point that out to you so that if in case you haven't seen it, you'll realize that as you go back and reread this. Okay, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 7. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. So the initiative then is taken by Michael. Who's Michael? He's the prince that stands for Daniel's people in the book of Daniel. In other words, he is the prince of the people of Israel. Verse 8. And the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, and neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they love not their lives unto the death. And there you see the overcomers, and you see what they'll have to do in order to overcome. The Lord said to each of those seven churches in those seven letters to the angels of the seven churches of Asia, he said, he that overcometh, and to him that overcometh, and the overcomers will be called sons of God. The people all the way through the book of Revelation are referred to as servants, but they're never referred to as sons. They can be sons of God only by overcoming, you see. And that's not the case with you and I, is it? We have the spirit of adoption, and God the Father is also our Father. And that's a different situation, and that's a contrast between people like you and me and the people that we're reading about here in the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she was nourished. Now, there's that time frame again. For a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as of a flood after the woman. That's probably armies there. Seas are people, they're nations. And this flood evidently is armies that are in the control of the Antichrist. He cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, there's no way that you could mistake that for some Roman Empire, whether it was pagan or Christian or whatever, anything else, could you? That's the devil himself, manifest in the flesh. And we're going to see that in the next chapter. Now, in 2 Thessalonians, we're told that the revelation of that individual has an appointed time. He cannot arise before his time, and we're told why, and we're told how this is. Look with me in 2 Thessalonians, and notice in chapter 2 and verse 5. Remember you not that while I was yet with you, I told you these things? And now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let, until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. So, the point is, the man of sin can't be manifested before his time. He's operating during all the time of the book of Revelation, which is after the rapture of the church. And in the second half of the seven-year tribulation, he is Satan himself, manifest in the flesh. And we're going to see that when we go to chapter 13, and we see those two beasts rise up, the one out of the sea and the one out of the earth. Like I said, the book of Revelation is just simply not written in chronological order. So you have to kind of study these things out and more or less piece them together in your mind. You follow what I'm saying, guys? Now, going back to the sun-clothed woman, there's an important link between what Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and what John wrote in the book of Revelation, back in Revelation chapter 12 and back to verse 5. And she brought forth a man-child, which was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. Notice the man-child, in the verse there, is caught up. Jesus Christ wasn't caught up. Jesus Christ ascended up. But the Bible never says that he was caught up. Paul was called up in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. The church, the body of Christ, will be called up, as in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. But Christ ascended up. Go back to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2 and verse 9. Excuse me, it's not Acts chapter 2, verse 9. It's Acts chapter 1. And verse 9, yes, thank you, Jeannie. And when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven, as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel. Come to Ephesians chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 10. He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things. So the point I'm making here is that Christ ascended up, you see. But this man-child that we're looking at here in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 5, this man-child was caught up. What if the man-child is not a reference to Jesus Christ, but it's a reference to somebody else? Now notice in Revelation chapter 14 and verse 1. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads. Did you notice that, guys? Notice that there's a lamb there, not a lion. When Christ comes, he comes as a lion. He comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But this is a lamb. And with him, the 144,000. Come to verse 3. And they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000, which were redeemed from the earth. Notice they were redeemed from the earth. Come to the next verse, verse 4. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and unto the Lamb. They were redeemed from among men, and they are the first fruits unto God and unto the Lamb. Now, when you have first fruits, what follows? Well, when you have first fruits, you have an ingathering, don't you? But it appears that the 144,000 are the first fruits. So, that's a preview. And we'll cover it more in detail when we come to chapter 14. So there's nothing like a good cliffhanger, is there? And that'll finish up for today, guys. Questions or comments?